All right, so we're up to step 10. Who would have thunk it? Step 10. I hear people talk about step 10 being the maintenance steps. And my sponsor and I had this conversation a lot about we don't actually want to maintain, we want to grow. They are the growth steps. This is where I continue to grow on a regular basis. So step 10 is continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. I do not know where we get the idea that once we've worked the steps, we're never going to make a mistake again, because it says so right there in that step. When, not if. When. It means I'm going to. It tells me I'm going to, and it gives me something that I can do. When I was early in, I thought that step read, continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it to our spouse. I don't know where I got that from, but anytime I'd made a mistake, I would tell Kent, which did not work well for me, because my husband early on likes to gloat. He doesn't anymore, but at the time he would gloat and he would hold on to it and he would use it. And so what I had to learn to do is when I took the personal inventory and I promptly admitted, I learned to promptly admit it to my sponsor. I would call her and say, this is what I've done. This is what I said. This is, and then of course, early on, I would explain why I said or did what I said. And she would say, all right, do you think you owe an amends? And if I didn't know if I owed the amends, she would say to me, well, how would you feel if you ran into the hall? I'm like, oh, I don't really want to see them. And then you owe them the amends. If I'm not willing to look at you, then I probably owe you the amends. How do I know if I owe the amends? Would you go and sit down and have a cup of coffee with them? Not if I didn't have to, then you owe an amends. That's that whole idea. That's where out of the step 10 inventories where the defiance came from. And one other thing that I've learned as when I was wrong, I promptly admitted it. I don't explain what I did. I don't explain why I did. I don't try and justify my behavior. And I don't just apologize. Hey, I'm sorry I did this. When I make an amends today, I will say to my husband, I'm sorry I reacted in the way in which I reacted, and I'm sorry I accused you of X, Y, and Z. I will do my best in the future to pause and not do that again. I will do my best in the future to ask before I jump in. Those kind of things. That's how I have to do it. One of the things my sponsor asked me to do is, in order to look at that step 10, is she had me do a little exercise. You know, if I'd call and I say, he hurt my feelings, she would say, all right, I got to read my notes so I can actually see the little process that she has me do. She said, all right, why did it hurt your feelings? What was it in you that he pricked? Right? Is what he said true? And she'd make me look at that. What was it in me? I'm insecure. I'm fearful. I have low self-esteem. All right. What is it that it's pricking in me? What's the defect of character in me? Why did it hurt? It hurt because it suggests I read into it. I interpreted it. This is what he meant. Is it true? Because, you know, she said to me, just because he says it doesn't make it true. Many years ago now, we were out on a Friday evening and we were training for a marathon because, well, I was an idiot. That's pretty much the reason I was training for a marathon. It was early in recovery. I needed to lose the weight. I needed to start exercising. And Kent said I needed a goal and I should run a marathon. Now, I don't know why I didn't think I could run a 5K or a 10K or even a half marathon, but he's alcoholic. I think we both forgot that at the time. So you should run a marathon. So I was training for a marathon and it was a Friday night. And I said, I'm not going to get up and run in the morning. I'm tired. It's been a long week at work. And he said, well, that's because you're lazy. And I hurt my feelings, and I right as soon as it did hurt my feelings. Right, why did it hurt my feelings? Because it suggested he thought less of me. It made me insecure. It affected my ego. And then I thought to myself, is it true? But actually, it's not true. It was not true. So I didn't have to take it on. And I said to him was, I don't believe that's true. And then he wanted to explain it and justify it. I'm like, no, we're not talking about it. I'm just telling you, I don't think that's true. And he came to me later and made the amends. Says, I shouldn't have said that. I snapped at you that had nothing to do with you. And I love that he was willing to do that. I want to take one step back and go to the ninth step. Because, you know, we're talking about how I work these steps for me. But as a result of me working the steps, I can give a lot of grace and a lot of compassion to those around me. The ninth step amends I want to talk about is my husband's ninth step amends. When he came to me and said he had not gotten an early out of the military, he got kicked out for alcohol rehabilitation failure. That was a huge shame of his. And I knew that it was a shame of his. And I knew he was working the steps on it. And we were about 6, 7, 8 years in the program when he came to me and he said, he had gotten a job with the Department of Defense, and he said, they are asking for civilians to volunteer to deploy, and I'd like to volunteer to deploy. And I asked him two questions. The first question I asked him was, is this part of your ninth step amends to the military? Because I knew what the ninth step was. I knew how important the amends were. And he said, yes. And I said, can I pray about it and talk to Luana about it? And he said, yes. And I called Luana up and said, oh my God, he wants to volunteer to deploy to Djibouti, to volunteer to deploy. And she said, my husband, my sponsor is married to a now retired Air Force colonel who'd been deployed three times. I did not realize that until we had this conversation. And she said, well, do you practice the traditions in your marriage? And I said, well, you know that I do. And she said, well, what's the fifth tradition? And the fifth tradition, because I always get it wrong, I'm going to read it to you. The fifth tradition says, each Al-Anon family group has but one purpose, to help families of alcoholics. We do this by practicing the 12 steps of AA ourselves, by encouraging and understanding our alcoholic relatives, and by welcoming and giving comfort to families of alcoholics. She said, well, if you're practicing that, if you're going to support and encourage your alcoholic relative, how can you possibly say no? And I said, well, when I guess you put it that way, don't guess that I can. So I went back to Kent and I said, if this is something that you feel like you need to do for your recovery, then I will support you. And he said, okay. And that was probably in 2004, 2006, someplace in there, probably 2006. Because I had done the work on it, because I had talked to my sponsor about it, because I trusted in the process, I power graded myself, because I'd worked all the steps by that point, because I knew what the ninth step was, because I knew the importance of him working his program of recovery, I was okay with him doing whatever needed to happen. That was in 2006. In 2010, he called me up one Wednesday afternoon and he said, hey, I'm picking your mom up. We're going to dinner out of cycle. Meet me at the steakhouse. And so I said, all right. So I met him at the steakhouse and he said to me, I don't think I'm going to get to go. And I said, go where? What are you talking about? And he said, you know, I've been applying for the deployments. And I was so okay with whatever God's plan was, I had completely forgotten that he was lying. I had no recollection of it. I'm like, oh, honey, I'm so sorry that you're not going to get to go. And then thinking to myself, happy dance. It's one of these times where Al-Anon says, you just have to be willing. You don't actually have to do anything different. That was great. So I'm like, oh, I'm so sorry you're not going to go. Unbeknownst to me, he'd been trying to force a solution for 4 years, trying to get to Iraq, trying to get to Afghanistan. And I was like, whoa, I just trusted the process. I trusted God. I trusted the steps. I trusted his program recovery. I trusted my program recovery. It was on a Wednesday evening. Monday afternoon at 4 o'clock, he said, called me and he said, hey, I'm being deployed. And I said, really? Because that's what you've taught me to say. Really? I said, where are you going? He said, Djibouti. And I said, where? And he said, Africa. And I said, wow, because that's what you guys have taught me to say too. And then I hung the phone. I said, I'm at work. I can't really talk right now. I'll talk to you when I get home. And I hung the phone up and immediately called Luana. Oh my God, he's going to Africa. I'm very dramatic with her, not so much dramatic with my husband. And she gave me some very specific directions about what I needed to do while he was away. And so one of the things she told me to do was we needed to find something we could do together while we were apart. And I made the mistake of telling Kent that. And he said, scuba diving. And I said, I'm afraid of being underwater. And he said, scuba diving. And I was like, do you not listen to me? But no, because he hears what he always hears when he doesn't want to listen to me, which is scuba diving. So I called Luana and I said, he wants to learn to scuba dive. And I'm afraid of being underwater. And she said, learn to scuba dive. I said, I am afraid of being underwater. What are you people not getting with this? And she said, do it afraid, but take God with you. Click. I'm like, where do they learn this stuff? Then I thought to myself, well, they're never going to, you know, he's never going to get to scuba dive. I mean, it's Africa, for God's sake. Really? Are they going to scuba dive? And I ended up putting him on a plane the end of August to go to Djibouti, Africa for a year. I'd get to see him once the entire time he was gone. And we're not going to have the scuba diving issue. The other thing Luana told me to do was be of service. Get out of self, make yourself available. And I said a prayer to the God that I now believe in, who wants me to be happy, joyous, and free, that I'd be willing to work with anybody who asked while he was gone. And I'd be willing to go anywhere you asked me to go while he was gone. I didn't say it out loud because I wasn't really sure that I wanted him to hear me, but I said it. And so I put my husband on a plane on a Tuesday. And on Thursday, I was at an AA conference in Nashville, Tennessee, when Kent called me from Djibouti, Africa. And he said, I am in a tent with 65 guys and it's 110. And I said, honey, it sucks to be you today, but I am in a junior suite with chocolate covered strawberries. And the next day I got a call from a woman in Montgomery who said, the women in Alcoholics Anonymous said I needed to ask you to take me through the Al-Anon steps. I've been going to AA meetings. I'm not going to Al-Anon, but I'm the wife of an alcoholic. And I started taking her through the steps, and I started getting on planes, and I started having people come out of the woodwork for me to take them through the steps. And through that entire time, I thought I was doing it as a ninth step amends to for my husband, that all I was doing was going to be supportive of him. What ended up happening to me, because I do not believe that God wastes anything in this universe, as a result of me doing everything you guys had asked me to do, and that's part of carrying this message, showing up, we're taking other people through the steps. At the end of that year, I cannot tell you when it happened. I cannot tell you where it happened, but I can tell you that it happened. At some point at the end of that year, I realized for the first time ever, I was enough. In and of myself, I was enough. I absolutely adore my husband, and I love my husband. And if he were to come to me tomorrow and say, I gotta go, it would break my heart, but it would not crush my soul, because I no longer have to be married. I get to be married. And that is a whole different ballgame. It's part of that freedom that I not have to be with him. I get to be with him, and that changes everything. But I didn't know how to do that. I had to work these steps, and I had to continue to look at where I had been wrong. I had to continue to look at where I had made the amends. As a result of me doing all that work, I got to go, and I learned to scuba dive. He called me from Africa, and he said, hey, Djibouti is the second place on the planet to scuba dive with the whale sharks. My first lesson is tonight. When is yours? And I went, oh, crap, I guess it's Wednesday. And I went to learn to scuba dive. And I sat there. I sat in the car. I turned around to the passenger seat in my car, and I said, apparently, God, I'm going to learn to scuba dive. Try not to let me die. And obviously, I didn't die, and I learned to scuba dive. And as a result of doing what you guys told me to do and doing it afraid, I learned to scuba dive. And when Kent could come home for his mid-leave tour, we made a decision that I would go to him instead. And I went to Tanzania, Africa, and we spent 2 weeks in Tanzania. And I did a photo safari, a 10-day photo safari on the Serengeti and the plains. And I got to, I took 4,956 pictures of lions and giraffes and zebras and wildebeests. And then we spent 5 days scuba diving in the Indian Ocean. And the only reason I was able to do that is because you guys taught me how to do it. You told me to take the action, and it didn't matter. I continue to take personal inventory. I end up having to make an amends to my husband a lot because I'm quick, and I'm fast with my tongue. And my immediate reaction is to be defiant with him, right? And he will say to me, you're deflecting. I don't think I deflect as much as he says I deflect, but I will look at it and see, do I owe him the amends? And if I owe the amends, it doesn't matter whether he owes me the amends. I need to do it for me. And I keep my side of the street clean in that. I do it so that when I go to bed at night and I wake up in the morning, I don't have to feel that sense of guilt or shame or uncomfortableness because I don't want to face anybody. And I can make an amends very quickly. But then on top of making the amends, I actually have to change my behavior. This program is transformational. It's designed to transform me. And I want to be transformed. And I know what that looks like today. So I continue to do it. Step 11 is probably one of my most favorite steps on the planet. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him. Praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. Kent had a sponsor who used to say, step 11 is not extra credit. It's actually one of the 12 steps. I have a number of people who have said to me, well, I really can't pray. I really can't meditate. I'm like, I get the idea. I get the thought that you can't do it. But it doesn't say anywhere in our literature that we perfect meditation or we perfect prayer. All it says in any piece of literature we have, and I've got it all, it says we practice. And we continue to practice. We've done a lot of things over the years for our step 11 practice. I've done a lot of things for my step 11 practice. One of the very first things we did was I'm a big reader. I like words. We started buying all sorts of spiritual literature, all sorts of stuff. We have got a ton, not just recovery stuff. We explore, we do all sorts of stuff. We had a guest room. We had a guest room in our house. And we recognized very early on that we didn't particularly want any guests. The only people who would come see us are his parents. My mother lives across the street. She doesn't actually need to stay with us. And my siblings. And said, we don't really need a guest room. It's wasted space. Let's make a serenity room. So we took all the guest furniture out of it, donated to charity, and we made a serenity room. We have pictures of Crested Butte, Colorado. We have pictures of mountains. We have the Serenity Prayer in there. We have religious icons in there. We have all the spiritual literature that we have purchased in there. We have a futon couch in there. We have a recliner chair in there. And that's where I do all my work with my sponsees. When I'm at the house, as I do it there. If I'm at the office, I do it in another room, not at my office, but at the house, that's where I talk to anybody, is in the Serenity Room, because that is where I'm serene. It's one of the things that we did. The other thing that I need to do, for me, step 11 involves time and effort. I need to make the time and I need to make the effort, right? Saying a quick prayer as I'm running out the door is not effective for me. One of the things that we have done since the pandemic started, we started with the pandemic as we started walking. We walk, we have a dog, Ragnar the Wonder Pup. He is a 70-pound Belgian Malinois German Shepherd. And we walk him every morning. And we have a track up near the house. And there was a guy who had a whippet, and he would come right after we got there. So Ragnar couldn't walk on the track, which I thought was a little, you know, this was our track. Ragnar should be able to walk on the track. But instead of saying anything to the guy or being a bad neighbor, we adjusted our behavior. So we started with, we'd get up at 5 and walk Ragnar, and then the guy would show up at 4:30, so we couldn't walk Ragnar. So we started going at 4, and then the guy would show up at 4:15, so we couldn't walk him. So we said, all right, we get up at 3, we're on the road at 3:30, and we walk Ragnar from 3:30 to 4:30. And during that time, Kent and I talk about all sorts of stuff. That's a time that we talk together. That's a time where we say prayer, that's where I say my prayers. That's where I talk to God, that we watch the deer. We have deer in our neighborhood. We have armadillo. We watched early on, probably about 3 months ago, there was a mama deer and she's got twin babies. And we have seen them a bunch of times out there. And that's just God saying to me, pay attention. I'm here. Pay attention. I'm going to show you all this stuff. But that takes time. I tell people, we get up at 3 o'clock to walk the dog at 3:30. Like, oh my God, that's awful. No, it's effort. Because that's what I need to do. I make the effort. I make the time. People ask me, I had somebody ask me at a meeting not so long ago, is going to one meeting a week enough to guarantee success and recovery? Not for me. For me, I have to talk to somebody in this program every day. And when I started realizing about it, I usually talk to two people in this program every day. I will talk to somebody in the mornings between the hours of 6 and 7:30, and I will talk to somebody in the afternoons between the hours of 4 and 5. I will also talk on different days to other people at different times on my lunch hour. But one of the things that happened for us is I have to sought through prayer and meditation. I had to figure out what worked for me. People talk about meditation and I can't do the meditation. I can't sit still. As you can probably tell, sitting quietly is not easy for me. So I don't. I walk. I walk through the building. I get up and I walk. I walk at home. We walk outside, we walk. That's where being outside in nature is where I feel the strength of my higher power. It's where I feel connected to my higher power. Anytime we travel, we try and end up someplace where we are outside in nature. I know that about myself now, but I had to figure that out. I have done meditation in the living room, tried to sit quietly. I have probably 5 meditation timers on my phone. We have the Serenity Room. We bought a meditation cushion. It was too low to the ground for me. I bought a meditation bench that I can travel with. All I'm seeking to do is improve my conscious contact. We did that. We did organized religion. Through the course of our recovery, we have tried all sorts of things. And that's what I love about this. It says that we seek. It never says that we find. I sought through prayer and meditation to improve. It doesn't say perfect. I just keep trying. That's the gift for me, is the ability to keep trying. Let's try what works. Let's see what doesn't work. Ooh, that really, sitting quietly in my living room like this going, did not work for me. I could do it in the Serenity Room for a little bit. Being outside really works. That's what I love about that. The other thing about step 11, let's see it here. All right. Praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry out. Tell me what you want me to do, God. Give me the power to carry that out. I no longer get to go. And this is just me. This is my experience. I no longer get to go to God with a laundry list. This is what I would like to have happen. This is what I would like to have happen. God, please give me this. When I was probably 6 or 7 years in the program, I got the opportunity to apply for my dream job. And I was not sure that I wanted to do it. I didn't think that I was good enough. I didn't think that I was smart enough. I didn't think that I should do it. And I talked to my husband and I talked to my sponsor, and they both said, well, my sponsor said is, your job is to walk in the direction of your dreams. Where you end up is up to God. It's not up to you. Do the footwork. I cannot tell you the number of times my sponsor has said, do the footwork. And the only way to be considered is to apply. So apply. So I applied. And then I was talking in a meeting, one of our larger meetings in town, and was talking about I'd applied for this job and I really didn't know I didn't know, blah, blah, blah. And a brand spanking new guy, God bless his heart. He looked at me, crosstalk, had no concept of that. And he said, you need to tell God you want the job. And I said, thank you. I thought, I don't actually need to tell God I need the job. And people would ask me, what do we pray for? What do we pray for? What do we pray for? I said, pray for God's will to be done. Just pray for God's will to be done. It's up to God. It's God's will to be done. And that's what we all prayed for. And I applied for the job. I was in the top five. They hired two and I was third on the list. So I didn't get the job. Right. And I had that moment of, ugh. And then I had, all right, I didn't get the job. I'd asked for God's will to be done. And I believe God's will to be done. And so, but what I did know is that because I had felt less than when I applied, there was more work for me to do. So I talked to my boss and I said, will you mentor me? And he said, yes. So he started mentoring me. And then 2 weeks after I didn't get that job, we found out that his wife was diagnosed with terminal breast cancer. And I knew with every fiber of my being that I was exactly where I needed to be so that he could be where he needed to be, which was with his wife and his family. Right? He would not have been able to go and be with his wife and his family if he did not trust me to do what needed to be done at the office. And so from that point in September until she passed away in February, I was able to be of service to my boss. You know, we talk about being of service, God's will for us, and to carry the message and to be of service. It doesn't just mean in the rooms. I knew, I absolutely knew that I was exactly where I needed to be. Two people came down to me and said, you need to be really angry you didn't get that job. And I said to them, yeah, I prayed for God's will to be done, and I'm sure it's exactly where I'm exactly where I'm supposed to be. And she said to me, that's a healthy attitude to have. And I said, thank you. And that was it. And I was perfectly okay with it. And I spent the next 4 or 5 years doing what I needed to do. I was able to be of service to my boss. I was able to allow him to do what he needed to do. And to be with his wife and to be with his daughters. He has three daughters. And about 5 or 6 years later, 7 years later, somewhere in there, another opportunity came up for me to apply for that job. And he called me. We were actually at a conference together in Dallas, Texas. And he said, the job is open. You need to apply. And I said, okay, I will. And I applied for the job. That was probably in the spring. And I was on my way to a conference in Omaha, Nebraska, when I got a text message from him when we landed. And he said, you need to call me when you land. And so I called him and he said, you didn't get the job. And I had, again, that moment of, then why am I doing all this damn work if I'm not going to get the prize? And that was only the first thought. I didn't act on it. I went, keep going. You know why you did the work. And then he said to me, my job would not be near as much fun if you were to leave me. I know you need to go and do what you need to do to protect your family, but I'd really like you to consider staying with me. He was not quite ready to retire. And so I talked to Ken about it. I said, can I talk to Ken about it? And he said, sure. And so we were actually in Omaha doing their little fun run for the conference, running and talking and praying and meditating. And he said, you like who you work for? And I said, I absolutely love who I work for. And he said, then why would you want to go and work for anybody else? And I said, all right, that makes that easy. I said, I can apply the next time it comes up. And he said to me, my husband said, I'd really like you to consider not doing that. And I said, really, why is that? And he said, because I know you, if you were to get the job in a couple of years, you'd feel compelled to work until the term was up, which would be 14 years. And that will put us in Montgomery at 70. And I don't want to be in Montgomery when we're 70. And I said, huh. He said, I know you think you've done a lot of really good work for the investment firm. And I trust that you've handled the money well. I'd like to verify it. That's a motto in our house. Trust but verify. I'd like to verify it. Let's go talk to a financial planner. So I said, okay. And I prayed about it and I talked to my sponsor about it. And what we came to is the only reason I apply for the job again, because what I'd come to is doing all the work that I've done, all the inventory work that I've done, all the step work that I've done, that part of being enough, I am enough today, is my job does not define who I am. And what I realized was the only reason I'd apply again is so that you all would think well of me. The only reason I'd apply again is for the financial security. And did I really need the financial security, or was I going to trust God? Mindy had talked about Ellen C. a little earlier. Ellen tells a story about how much money do you need to be financially secure? Just enough that you don't have to trust God. And so we went, we met with the financial planner, and I thought the financial planner was going to tell us we could retire at 62. He said, you guys are good to go at 60. I'm like, really? 60? That opens up a whole new ball game. And so I didn't apply the next time the position came open. And what ended up happening is my boss came to me and he said, I'm fixing to retire, but somebody that you know really well is fixing to get nominated, and I'd like you to consider going to work for her. And what ended up happening was his daughter got nominated for a position. And the last day that I could work for my boss, who was retiring, was the first day I could start working for her. And that's who I've worked with for the last 2.5, almost 3 years. And I had said I didn't want to go work for a new person, and I was wrong about that. It's been a great blessing to me to be able to do this. I'm building a very firm foundation for her so that when I go, she'll be okay. I've known her since she was 15. And I look at this and I think of the synchronicity and what a great God I have that he would give me this opportunity. My very first job was here. My last job is here. It's very spiritual to me. And when I told her I needed to come and do this afternoon, she said, okay. But that's what I have done as a result of the work that you've done, which brings us to this step 11. I've continued to seek God's will, and God's will has continued to put me in places. And step 12 says, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we try to carry this message to others and to practice these principles in all our affairs. And I want to talk about three different phrases of that step. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. I think one of the weirdest things we say is that we're a member of the 12-step program and we haven't worked all 12 steps. This is not a 5-step program. It's not a 7-step program. It's a 12-step program. And when people call me and they say, I'm struggling, I say, where are you in the steps? And oftentimes they will say, well, I've done a 4th or a 5th step, or I haven't really made any amends. Or I'll say, what are your spiritual disciplines of 10 and 11 and 12? Because I believe 10 and 11 and 12 are the spiritual disciplines. Admitting when I'm wrong, amending my behavior, changing, getting in contact with my higher power, staying in contact with my higher power, and being of service in that 12th step. Where are you in the spiritual disciplines of 10, 11, and 12? And they look at me as if I sprouted a third head. What are you doing for your step 10? What do you mean, what am I doing for my step 10? I apologize if I make a mistake. All right. What are you doing for step 11? Well, I pray in the morning. What are you doing for step 12? I go to a meeting. I may chair a meeting. I might sponsor somebody. The folks I sponsor who I absolutely adore, they have been the greatest gift I have been given in my life, is these men and women who have allowed me to walk the path with them. When they call me, usually they'll call me and they'll say, I've been asked to speak and I don't want to speak. And when they call me, I am usually at some place speaking. I'm like, you know, you called the wrong person, right? You know, whether you want to speak or not is completely immaterial. I do a lot of stuff I don't want to do. Just speak. Why wouldn't you speak? Well, I don't have anything to offer. That's not up to you. That's up to God. You've been asked to speak. Share your story. And I'll tell that to anybody. Same thing with sponsorship. Oh, I don't know that I can get it right. There is no right. If you share your experience, strength, and hope, you can't get it wrong. You know? So I digress. Sorry. Let me go back. Spiritual awakening. That which has awoken can go back to sleep, which is why 22 years later, I continue to do what I do. If I only went through the steps once, I will have fallen back asleep spiritually. I want to stay awake. I want to pay attention. I want to be present. I want to be mindful of what is going on. It says, as the result of these steps, if I work all 12 steps, I am going to have that spiritual awakening. And what happened for me was I had the spiritual awakening and it was so cool. I wanted to keep having it. I wanted to get deeper. I wanted to do more. So it says we carry the message to others. It doesn't say we carry the message to others in program. It says we carry the message to others. That's everybody else in the world. That's why I'm kind to the people at Publix. That's why I'm of service to my boss. That's why I am. I show up when I'm asked to show up. I answer the phone when I can. If I can go, I go. I carry the message to people who are not in program. I may be the only example anybody ever sees of recovery. Do a lot of them see me being a crazy woman? Or they want to see me having some serenity and some peace and some compassion and some kindness, right? And then to practice these principles in all our affairs. I had somebody call me up and said, what are the principles of Al-Anon? I said, that's not really the question. I said, the question is, what are your principles that you've discovered in Al-Anon? And they were like, ooh, that's a good one. Yeah, I have a list. I have a bunch of them, but I got a list. Some of the principles, some of my principles, because I want to live a principled life that I have discovered as a result of working all 12 steps. Honesty, trust, perseverance, willingness, open-mindedness, integrity, character, dependable, faithful, accepting, compassionate, grateful, loving, mindful, tolerant. Those are all the principles that I want to live by, right? And if I can live by those principles, I can make my little corner of the world. It's been a tough year with the COVID and the politics and all sorts of other stuff. And I have folks who are like, it's a really tough year. And I understand that. But honestly, it hasn't been that tough for me because I have stayed absolutely connected to my higher power and to my Al-Anon program. We've gone to Zoom in my Al-Anon. My home group, I don't know if I said this, is the Tuesday and Thursday First Things First Al-Anon Family Group meeting in Montgomery, Alabama. And we meet at 6:30 a.m. Monday, Tuesdays and Thursdays. And I like to say, you got to really want recovery to get up that early to be at the meeting. And these days, you don't actually have to be at the meeting. You can do it from your living room, except because of my job and because I am in the office, in order for me to be at my meeting at 6:30, I need to be at my office by 6. So I'm leaving my house at 5:30 on Tuesday mornings to be at my house, to be at my office at 6 so I can be on my meeting at 6:30 because it's important to me. I often say, if you want to figure out what's important to somebody, see where they place their time and their money, right? Where are you going to spend your time? Where are you going to spend your money? And this is important to me. It's important to me because I have been transformed. I am not the woman that I was when I got here on September 18th, 1998. Thank you, God, I am not her. And I like the woman that I am today. That doesn't mean that there's not areas for me to improve, but I continue to do the work. I talk to my sponsor on a regular basis. We have a set time for a phone call. It's on Friday afternoon, unless something like what happened this week happened. And I will then text her or call her and say, hey, I can't make the phone call. I can also call her and make the phone call. If something happens out of cycle, I have set times with the folks that I sponsor who are not in town, because that time together is as valuable to me as it is to them. And actually, frankly, for me, it's more valuable to me, right? I could not have gotten through the year deployment without the people in Al-Anon who allowed me to sponsor them and who asked me to talk. I don't know that I could have gotten through the COVID stuff without the people I sponsor who have allowed me to talk to them and stay connected to the program. One of the things my sponsor has drilled into my head is you cannot ask the people you sponsor to do anything you're not doing yourself. So I can't ask them to pray and meditate if I'm not praying and meditating. I can't ask them to read literature if I'm not reading the literature. I can't ask them to work the steps if I'm not working the steps. And I have worked the steps a number of ways. I don't care how you work the steps. I don't care what literature you use. One of the things that happened as a read, and I hear people talking, you know, oh, this is awful. It's not the same as being in meetings. I get that. But instead of looking at what we don't have, let's look at what we do have. We've got this. We have currently got 133 people from around the country and in other parts of the world listening to Al-Anon Recovery on a Saturday afternoon. We have tapers like Billy who are putting this stuff out on the internet and allowing us to download it. Because I can only get to one meeting a week these days because of my work schedule, I have on my phone, I download on my phone speaker tapes and I connect it to my car. And I have a 30-minute ride into work in the morning. I have a 30-minute ride home at work in the afternoon. And I am listening to speaker tapes. I'm not listening to the news. I'm not listening to ESPN. I'm not listening to country music. I am listening to speaker tapes because I need to stay connected. That's what works for me, right? I've got a couple of folks. We're working through reaching for personal freedom workbook. I think it's a great workbook. If you've been through the steps once, if you haven't been through the steps, I encourage you to, however your sponsor takes you through the steps. But I did them through Path to Recovery. Then I've done Reaching for Personal Freedom, and I've done Reaching for Personal Freedom by going through steps, traditions, and concepts. What we've been doing lately, in the last couple of years, is we've been going through them horizontally, step, tradition, concept. So we do step one, tradition one, concept one. Step two, tradition two, concept two. And I love it because they all tie together. All those principles tie together. I've done Blueprint for Progress. I don't particularly care for the Blueprint for Progress. I don't know how many people here know that little old, the very first blueprint, the little blue one, right? This is just out of nowhere. I rarely tell this, but I'm going to tell it. Don't know why. Somebody needs to hear it. I was at a conference in California a number of years ago, and I was sitting at the luncheon, and we were talking about the four step, and I said, yeah, that little blue book, man, that thing sucks. It's awful for an inventory. And the woman sitting next to me said, I have 55 years in Al-Anon, and I was on the literature committee when we developed that book. And I went, oh, damn, I probably shouldn't have said that. And she said, and you're right, it does stink for a four step inventory. It was never designed as a four step inventory. It was designed as a 10th step inventory for you to look at in the night. And I'm like, oh my God, that makes so much sense. I've taken the Blueprint for Progress, the more recent one that's got the big sections, and done specific sections that are applicable to me at any given time. The biggest and the best thing I can tell you about the steps for me is it doesn't matter how you do them, just do them, right? Just do them. People I know who are struggling are people who are either just going to meetings, they're not calling their sponsor because they don't want to be a bother. If I agree to sponsor you, I agree to be bothered. If I agree to sponsor you, I asked you to call me. When you ask me to sponsor you, the first thing I do is I say, call me every day for 2 weeks. Whether I answer or not, call me. And if I don't answer, leave me a message. And if you need to talk to me, you need to tell me you need to talk to me, right? And what that looks like is, hey, this is so and so. I need you to call me. Please call me, right? I'd sponsor one gal for a while, and she said, I called, left your message, and you didn't call me back. I said, you didn't ask me to call you back. She said, yes, I did. I said, no. What you said was, gee, I sure would have liked to have talked to you. So where does that say I need you to talk? I need you to call me back. And what it did, and that's what my sponsor did for me, because what it did was it taught me to state my needs. It taught me how to use my voice, right? So I don't know how many people don't have a sponsor. I don't know how many people are not calling their sponsor. I'm not sure. When I got here, I got a sponsor because you told me to get one. I didn't hear anybody say call her, so I didn't, right? Never occurred to me to call her because nobody told me to call her. And then I asked somebody to be my sponsor, and she said, well, I'll be your sponsor, but I'm really busy, so I won't be able to do anything. I'm like, that's fine. I don't think I need you to do anything. So that's okay. I don't know. But when I asked Lawana to be my sponsor, and she said, are you willing to do what I've done for as long as I've done it to get what I've gotten? And I said, yes. As I said, I didn't have any idea what I was agreeing to. But what that meant was I needed to be doing the steps. I needed to be in meetings. I needed to be doing service work. I asked the folks that I sponsor, they're willing to do service work. I've had one say to me, oh, I'm not really sure I'm willing to do service work. And I said, well, that's great. Then you probably need to find another sponsor. Because that's what I have to offer you is my experience, my strength, and my hope. And my sponsor says, all you got is what's at the Cory store. And that what's at the Cory store is your experience, Cory's strength, Cory's hope. If somebody wants maybe what's at Carla's store, that's great. They can go and get what they want at Carla's store. But you can't get a Cory store where Carla has to offer, and that's fine. I can't sponsor the entire world, don't want to sponsor the entire world. But that's what's worked for me. Sponsorship has worked. That's part of being willing to carry the message is sponsorship both ways. Calling my sponsor and having the people I sponsor call me. Talking to people when they call and ask me to do stuff like this. Practicing the principles. Being trustworthy, showing up where I'm asked to show up. I had to let my boss know. I said, they all came into the office at 11. I said, I'm going to come in earlier because I have something I have to do from 2 to 5. And she said, okay, fine. I said, I can be here all day Sunday as well, but I got to do that from 2 to 5. So they came in at 11. At 1:15, I said, I got to eat something before I go do this. She said, fine. And then at 1:30, I said, I'll see you guys later. I don't know if they're still here or not. They may or may not, but if not, I'll see them in the morning because you've taught me to be dependable. You've taught me to show up when I'm asked to show up. You've taught me that I can say no if I don't think I can do something. There came a point in my recovery where Kent said to me, I don't feel like I'm a priority to you because you're on the phone every single night for 2 hours a night with sponsees, and I don't get any of your attention. And I had to take a look at that. I was grateful that he was willing to say it, and I had to take a look at that because this idea of being service means balance. And what I ended up doing was I ended up having to let go of some sponsees whose timing just didn't work for me. I ended up having to move some people, and I had to make a commitment to him that I would not schedule anybody on a Wednesday night or on a Friday night and on the weekends, unless there was blood or jail involved. right? And what I say to the folks that I sponsor, I cannot be the only person you call. You have to have three other people in the program that you can call if you cannot get me. I'm also up very early. I told you I'm up at 3 o'clock in the morning, which means if something's happening to you after 7:30, you better find somebody else to call, because it ain't going to be me, because I'm going to be asleep. And that's important too, because I cannot be the only connection somebody has to the program, right? Then he came to me and he said, it happened, actually, we were both speaking at the time, and he said, it's too much. We're speaking entirely too much. I'm wondering if that's my boss texting me. Hold on one second. I just want to make sure my boss is not texting me. Ooh, nope. All right. Never mind. Not who I needed. He said, it's too much. And I said, okay. And we talked about it, and we came to a decision that we weren't going to speak more than once a month. And after a couple years after that, he got a job in which he could not book speaking events so far out. And he said, I'm going to stop speaking. And I said, okay, fine. I said, I would like to continue to speak. And he said, that's fine. And then the first year when I did it, he said, you're gone an awful lot. Would you consider speaking less out of town? And I said, yes. And so I made a commitment that I would not speak more than 6 or 7 times a year out of town for him, so that I could be home. Because what the program has done for me is I have a friend who says, Al-Anon's not my whole life, but it allows me to have a whole life, right? I need to be able to be out in the world. I need to be able to take this program to my family. I need to be able to take my mother wherever. She said a few years ago, we were having dinner on Sunday, and she'd say, oh, sure would like go to the Chelsea Flower Show in London. I'm like, oh, really? That's interesting. Yeah, I sure would like to go to the Chelsea Flower Show in London. And it took about 4 weeks before I finally clued in, because sometimes I can be slow. I said to Ken, I think my mother wants to go to the Chelsea Flower Show in London. And he said, you think? And I said, what do you think? He said, I think you should do it. So I said to my mother the next time she said it, I said, would you like to go to the Chelsea Flower Show in London? Yes, but nobody will go with me. I said, I'll go. Really? I said, yeah, happy to go. So we got online and we figured out when the Chelsea Flower Show was. And turns out I had to speak in Michigan the weekend before. I said, all right, here's the deal. This is what's going to happen. I'm going to fly to Michigan. I'm going to go fly from Michigan to Boston. You're going to fly from Montgomery to Boston. I'm going to meet you in Boston. We're going to fly to London. And then we're going to fly home from London. She's like, all right. And that's what we did. I made those arrangements. I did it. My husband took her to the airport. I met her in Boston. We went to the Chelsea Flower Show. We had 10 days in England. We had a ball, because you taught me how to do that. You taught me how to show up and be present for my mother. It's been unbelievable. And when anything happens to my mom, she is 85 years old. She'll be 86 this year. I will have no regrets, because I've become the daughter that you've taught me how to be. When something happens with my husband, I have no regrets, because I have been the wife you have taught me to be. I have been a good employee. I've been a hardworking employee. I've been a good member of Al-Anon. My prayer in the mornings is, help me to be the best me that I can be, the best wife, the best puppy mom, the best daughter, the best sister, the best Al-Anon member, the best coworker. Guide me and direct me. Show me the way. Light my path. I also ask that I be shown the truth, and I be shown the truth about me, because I want to see the truth about me. Because if I see the truth about me, I can do something different. If I cannot see the truth about me, I'm stuck in whatever it is, right? I want to move forward. I want to grow. That's why I continue to do everything that I've been doing. What I have discovered as I've listened into a lot of Zoom meetings, the folks who are making the best of the pandemic are the people who are staying connected. The people who are struggling are the people who are in the negative thinking. I do a meeting at the end of the year every year and say, pick a word that you're going to focus on for the year. Last year, my word was flexible. I had no idea. I needed to be flexible. This year, my word is gratitude, because I am so incredibly grateful for everything that I've been given. I am so incredibly grateful for the program of Al-Anon and the program of AA. But even if my husband didn't do anything in AA, I have an opportunity to become that woman that I think God's called me to be, that He's created me to be, and that He challenges me to be. And I get to act like her, and I get to like her, and I get to be connected, not just to the God of my understanding, but to all of you, even when we're hundreds of miles apart. And I don't know where you'd get that anywhere else but here. I don't have any idea how long I've been. Oh, I'm almost done. And I think I am actually done. So I want to thank Debbie for asking me to participate. I want to thank all of you who have stuck around and listened to me. I want to thank Billy for recording this. And I want to say this. We say in Al-Anon, keep coming back. I say stay. Stay with us. Stay with us long enough for you to develop a relationship with the God of your understanding who wants you to be happy, joyous, and free, just like the God of my understanding wants for you. Thank you all very, very much, and may you have the wonderful rest of the afternoon. I'm done. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Corey.
Thank you. I
appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.